Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 130, brought to you by Mr. Boy Productions. My name is Zaki Hassan, and joining me once again is my partner, Brian Hall.
Hey, what's going on, Zaki? Anything going on today, by the way?
Not much. I'm just sitting here talking to you, recording. You know, really? this is the highlight of my day, which says something about the quality of my life, I guess.
Well,
no offense.
I'll just go out and say it. Happy birthday, buddy.
What?
It's your birthday.
It is my birthday.
Recording on your birthday. That's how dedicated you are.
I am. I love doing this show. Well, I gotta be honest, Brian. Doing this show, it's kind of like my present to myself. My birthday present to myself.
Does this count then that I don't have to buy you a birthday present? Or
well, you actually did get me a present a few weeks ago, and I should mention this on the show. And I should mention it because A, it's an awesome gift, and B, because I've gotten several comments about it. And it is a pitch black baseball cap with the words "Executive Produced by Dick Wolf" stitched onto the front. In the exact font that is familiar to anyone who has ever, you know, spent time at home watching hours and upon hours of Law and Order on television.
The moment I saw it, I literally clicked purchase. I was like, I'm saving this for Zeki's birthday.
So one thing Brian knows about me is that I'm kind of a crackhead when it comes to Law and Order. I'm basically a person who the characters on Law and Order would investigate due to my addiction to Law and Order. I've lost like several working days of just being like, all right, I'm just gonna like get ready, watch some TV while I get ready to go to work, and then like it's like a SVU marathon. And by the time there's somebody on the stand who's like, and then they took the broom handle and placed it in my rectum, I'm like, tell me more about what happened. That's like every episode of SVU, I think.
I know.
I almost feel like it's like a bet in the writer's room. Like they have to find a way to get that line in there.
Yeah, like
and
rectal
then it penetrated
breach
the rectum.
Or something.
Yeah, like yeah. Just somehow you have to involve the rectum in there. But I appreciate the baseball hat, so thank you for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But how are you doing? What's new and exciting in your life?
You know, it's funny. I was trying normally. You know, this time of the show, we try to talk about things we've watched and whatnot. And I've had
the
a lot of
seen.
I'm sorry.
I've seen some stuff, man.
Seen some
we
things, man.
Things we've seen.
But, I actually haven't seen a ton of stuff. I've been very busy. I had a friend in town from high school, and another friend of ours, who we both hadn't seen in 20 years, met up with us, and we were sort of reminiscing, and that was a lot of fun this weekend. I've been watching
so
a little
folks,
TV
if you're listening,
and whatnot. What's that?
If you're listening, folks, if you're listening, I'm here recording on my birthday. Brian couldn't be bothered to catch up and create some content for the show because he had friends to hang out with. So I'm just going to put this out there in the court of public opinion. Who's more dedicated?
We'll revisit this next episode and voters say you're guilty, guilty.
I know. I've seen enough stuff for both of us, but
okay.
Did you want to throw something?
I'll mention one thing, and I've just started it, so I'm going to give my initial opinion, and then we'll follow up on it when I finish it. But on Netflix, I started watching American Vandal. Have you heard of this?
American Vandal? I haven't.
Okay, so it is basically a spoof of these sort of like true crime series that are really popular now, like The Jinx or Making a Murderer, or especially it feels like a riff on Serial, that really, really popular podcast from 2 or 3 years back.
Yeah.
And the whole joke of it is that it's about at a high school, a kid is being accused of drawing 27 penises on the cars in the teacher's lot.
Oh, I have heard of this. Okay.
Yeah, and so,
that's
but it's
really
it's handled
okay.
Like deadly serious, you know, and it takes all the same beats and some familiar beats that actually happened in Serial pop up in this show. And like the kid is just a total, you know, doofus. And the person investigating the whatever. Yeah. The kid who's leading the investigation, he's an AV club kid from high school. So he acts like a high school kid, even though he's pretty smart. Mm-hmm. The first episode, I thought, okay, I mean, they keep saying, like, who drew the dicks? And I was like, this is funny, but I don't know if I'm going to laugh at this for 8 episodes. And then I started watching the second episode, and that's when it went full on Serial riff. And it's not a parody where it's sort of winking, like it just plays it straight, but it's totally a spot on spoof of these series. And the second one actually hooked me, because then I started wondering, well, they started throwing, you know, other characters in there, like, can she be trusted? And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I have to tune in again to see. So I got into it by episode 2. And I'll let you know what I think when I'm finished with it.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, I saw a couple things. I saw the Lego Ninjago movie.
Oh, yeah.
So we're at a point now where Lego is pumping out 2 movies a year. This is the second of their I mean, it feels like Lego Batman was longer ago.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I forgot that was this year.
Yeah. So this is based on the Ninjago toy line, and didn't perform, actually. I was kind of surprised. I just assumed it would do well, but it like kind of massively underperformed over the weekend.
Yeah, by, I mean, 40 million at least, right? Less than Batman.
Yeah, which, I mean, in hindsight, that's not hugely surprising.
Yeah,
because the draw, I think, specifically was Lego plus Batman.
Right.
And I can, just speaking for myself, I mean, I have no interest in the Ninjago franchise. You know, it's a TV show and everything. My kids really like it. And had it not been for a press screening, I mean, to be fair, you would have had to, like, twist my arm. I probably would have taken my kids because they're into it. But I wouldn't have been in a hurry, right?
Right.
So I'm here. I saw it because I'm pressed. So, you know, if parents are making a choice, I can easily see why they didn't go. However, I think it's a shame because I thought it was a pretty fun movie. I know nothing about Ninjago, but I still laughed a lot.
So, well, that's good to hear because, you know, with what you're saying, I saw Batman Lego in the theater because I love Batman and I thought that character was funny in the Lego movie. And I saw the Lego movie in the theater, but I did not see this movie and I wasn't planning on seeing this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm not familiar with the brand. I just thought, oh, that looks fun, but I don't know what this is. And it looks like more squarely aimed at kids. But I'm happy to hear that it seems to live up to the quality that the past 2 Lego movies have had.
It did. I mean, I was laughing out loud for much of it.
Oh, wow.
Which is saying something. And then afterwards, I asked my oldest kid who, again, all my kids are super into the TV show. They watched it on Netflix and stuff. And I was like, is it like the show? And he's like, no, it's nothing like the show.
Hmm.
And I thought that was kind of interesting, where it's just, they just did a Lego movieization of this Ninjago universe. But it's not. Because there's already a whole mythology and everything on the show that apparently this thing just ignored. And I was like, well, if I was a fan, I'd be kind of pissed about that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I think it'd be an extension.
Right.
Hmm. But they enjoyed it?
They liked it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Cool.
So that's Lego Ninjago. There's also a movie we talked about last time called Mark Felt, The Man Who Brought Down the White House.
Right.
And we mentioned, we discussed the trailer last time, and... Yeah, I mentioned how I was looking forward to it, and I did enjoy it. I would say it didn't, like, blow my hair back.
Okay.
But it's a very solid sort of procedural thriller.
Okay. I mean, is it worth checking out, like, Amazon streaming or something?
It is. It absolutely is. You know what it is, honestly? First of all, fantastic performances by this, I mean, just up and down. It's a great cast, you know? I mean, obviously Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson in full, like, righteous Liam Neeson mode.
yeah.
Nothing can stop the force of an FBI investigation, but an FBI investigation. You're like, gah. You know?
Yeah.
I think I peed a little, you know? It's a couple things. Number one, I mentioned this when we talked about it last time. You can't help but compare it with what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're aware of, like, the Robert Mueller thing happening with Trump and everything, and they didn't plan it, but, you can't help but be like, is this what Mueller is like, you know?
Right.
But great cast. Josh Lucas is in it, and what's his name? Tony Goldwyn from Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a... Oh, and Diane Lane also, her new job is basically being the wife in the historical docudrama. Right? Because I think she was just in Trumbo last year, too.
Oh, that's right.
Right. It feels almost like an adjunct to All the President's Men.
Hmm. Okay.
I think it would be a really cool experience to watch both of those films back to back, where you're getting the investigative side of Watergate and then the journalistic side of Watergate and right. how they intersect. And it's like there's this little piece where the both movies intersect with each other, you know?
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Totally, yeah.
So I think that would be a cool experience. Have you ever seen All the President's Men?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I've watched that recently enough where I appreciated the tonally, even they kind of fit together, you know.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and this one comes out September 29th, so by the end of this week. So
okay, it's interesting. It feels like there's a handful of movies coming out this month that like this, and then Stronger, right? That mm-hmm. you talked about last time mm-hmm. that are getting pretty decent reviews and seem like pretty decent Oscar-y or adult-ish sort of movies, but are getting like no advertising or, you know, awareness.
Yeah, I think that this year feels very distinct in that it really does feel like the movie industry is collapsing in on itself.
It's very, yeah, disappointing. Right? I saw that Stronger, when you had talked about it, I assumed it was a week or two out because I had heard nothing about it.
Yeah, and it opened like last week.
Yeah, I guess wide. It opened sort of small this past weekend, but I still haven't seen an ad for it or anything. So,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. These studios are in a tough spot, right? Because I think at this point, to some extent, like Stronger, right? That's like a passion project for Jake Gyllenhaal, and he produced it and whatnot. And you wonder if the studio partially signed off on that just as a way of keeping him happy so that they can get him in like their higher profile movies.
Mm, yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean?
Makes sense.
Also saw the debut of Star Trek Discovery.
I did too.
Oh, okay. So you watched it on CBS, I'm assuming.
I did.
So this is kind of an unusual thing where they aired the first episode on CBS, and then immediately after that, they dropped the second episode on CBS All Access, which is the streaming portal for CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched both episodes 1 and 2 via All Access. I'm assuming you only watched the first one.
Yes, and when it ended, I fast forwarded to see what was going to happen next, and it was just credits, and I was like, "Oh, okay."
Well, okay. So I'm curious about this because I mean, you know me. I'm like Star Trek fanboy number one on this show.
Uh-huh.
You're more like a normal human being.
A normie.
Yeah, you're a normie, right? I mean, you have a functional familiarity with Star Trek, but you don't live in that universe.
Yes, thanks to you.
That's true.
That's where
yeah,
my
the functional. Yeah. So I'm curious. This is your first time watching a Star Trek show from the jump.
Yeah.
How did you interface with it? I'm curious.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've just said it, but I didn't watch Next Generation. I have seen maybe 3 of the original Star Treks, and then I saw the J.J. Abrams films. Then you started showing me the original crew films, and I liked all of it. And so I went into this thinking, like, cool, this is current, and it's after all these things, and now I'm familiar with them. Let's jump in. And I'll admit, I had a hard time with it.
I was curious about that.
Yeah. Yeah, initially. And unfortunately, my experience was this. I had a long weekend, like I said, and I got really tired, and I had to split it in two. But the first half... I was like, man, this is moving kind of slow here. And I just wasn't even tracking with the drama that was happening. It's like the characters. Well, the opening, starting with the opening, there's this sort of, you know, this conversation that's happening as they're on this planet and someone
I mean, by way of context, this is Sonequa Martin-Green as the main
sorry.
Character, Michael Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michelle Yeoh as Captain Philippa Giorgio.
Yeah. And so there's this whole sort of teasery opening where I thought it was building to something, and they even tease some threats, like there's some sort of alien following them or tracking them. And then in the end, it didn't really add up to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very surprising and kind of a letdown. And it's almost, you realize that the character, the main, the captain, is doing something that you didn't realize, and it's revealed at the end. But it seemed like that the reveal didn't really make much of an impact. It would have made more of an impact if she'd been walking with her enemy and had been trying to be rescued.
Interesting.
And it was like talking them to death, but then you didn't realize she was actually finding a way out of the situation while she was talking to them. That's what occurred to me. I was like, that would have been a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and then we get on the ship, and it felt like all the characters didn't like each other. Like,
right.
They're all sniping at each other, and I was actually getting uncomfortable listening to all of them. Just as soon as someone said something, I was like, well, what's this person going to say to take that person down?
That's so funny.
Yeah, is that weird? I don't know. Maybe I'm just too sensitive or something. But and so then I fell asleep, like I said. Started it up again today, and then it sort of picked up.
Okay.
And I can tell where the story's going, and I did sort of, I wanted to keep going. Like I said, I was fast forwarding, like ready to keep going with what was happening and what was building all up to, but they didn't have, that was episode 2, so I kind of missed that. But yeah, sorry, all that to say, because I'm more interested in what you have to say. It did move slower than I expected, and I don't know if that's sort of a Star Trek tone. Like, maybe that's familiar in some of the other stories, because I'm not super familiar with it. Because reading other people's reviews, it seemed people were like, yeah, it felt like Star Trek. I'm like, oh, okay. Just maybe I'm just not used to it. But I don't know. It didn't really get its hooks in me, if I'm being honest.
So where I'm at, I think in terms of the pacing, I've had this conversation because some people disagree with me, but I think the pacing is a little bit different in that it's sort of more deliberate, and I think part of that comes from the fact that they have 15 episodes to essentially tell one continuous story.
Right.
As opposed to the usual with Star Trek, which is, you know, you introduce the conflict and you wrap it up by the end of 42 minutes.
Right.
And so this is not that. So this is in many ways doing Walking Dead style or Game of Thrones style storytelling within the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
You know?
I can see that. I don't know. It's funny because I kind of want to... I'm sort of tap dancing, I think, because I don't want to bring up things that are specific for people that haven't seen it yet. But
yeah.
The main character, who's the first, they call her the first.
Number one.
Number one. She decides to take the lead on this, you know, finding out this mysterious thing that's happening outside of their ship, which seemed kind of like a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then there are consequences if things don't finish in 20 minutes, and they don't finish in 20 minutes, and then there's no consequences, which I found kind of weird, too. I don't know. More than normal. I was sort of like, but what about why? But, and I just kept,
yeah,
things like that.
I mean, that I kind of said this in my review where I was like, well, it's a start. I mean, I'm interested in it. I'm already, to some extent I'm bought and paid for a little bit, cause I'm a Star Trek fan. So I'll stick with it for a little while. And I was thinking, I mean, when you think about many shows, like how many times have you tried to get somebody to watch a show? And you're like, just give it an episode or two.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even Breaking Bad, you're like, give it, like, 2 episodes.
Yeah.
And I felt like this suffers from that a little bit, where I have a feeling that when viewed holistically, you'll be like, oh, okay, I'm getting it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Twin Peaks recently, which I watched, I don't even think I mentioned it much on the show, but they debuted the first 2 episodes together. Yes. Which was a really good idea, because that show is so crazy and loose, and you need to dive in. And I wonder if maybe they should have, on network television, aired 2.
Right.
I don't know that it was enough for me as a newbie.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake. I said this online as well. I mean, I think the end of the second... You take the first 2 episodes, and they are, in essence... On a much larger canvas in terms of time to tell the story, what the first 10 minutes of the J.J. Abrams Star Trek was?
Yes. Yeah, I read your piece. I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and holy hell, by the way. Let me mention this, because I'm taking fire from all sides here.
I saw
what this. What I said in my review was it I'm paraphrasing. I said it does in 80 minutes what the Chris Hemsworth starring prologue of the Abrams movie did in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that statement in my mind makes sense.
Yes.
Now, let me bounce it off you. Is that a thing that people like Chris Hemsworth doesn't star in it? And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he's not the star of the movie. He's starring the prologue. And it's like, well, prologue's not the movie. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about the prologue.
That
well,
sequence.
Well, there's other people in
Who's
it.
Who's the star of that sequence?
Right. It's a, that's a, like that's not a con. That's not a horrible thing to say. That it, right?
No, and I don't think you're even doing a disservice to the actual stars headlining that movie. The stars of the movie aren't in the first 10 minutes.
Plus, it's like rhetorical shorthand because obviously Hemsworth is the biggest name in those 10 minutes. Now, whether he was a star back then or not,
right? Right.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's funny, now that you say that also, so in those 10 minutes of the opening of Star Trek, which are amazing.
Yes.
It's a ride, the whole beginning, middle, end ride. And CBS cut me off in the middle of it.
Yeah, because you know the DVR stuff got screwed up, right?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, I see,
didn't even
I see.
Get
okay.
to experience the 80 minutes. I only got 40 minutes. And it felt a little... loose and sort of wandery, and I was like, okay, and it just kind of ended as it was ramping up.
I have a couple thoughts. No, number one, yeah, I don't know if CBS's approach is going to pay off. I guess we'll find out if you know, they get a whole swell of new subscribers to CBS All Access. But above and beyond that, I feel like I'm trying to step gingerly here. I feel like, let me put it this way: in the opening credits, there's a familiar star who is listed as special guest star.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to me, that's such an odd thing to put in right in the opening credits.
Right, right.
I think you get what I'm saying, right? I'm trying not to, right? Because to some extent, you're sort of telegraphing the direction things are going to go without mm-hmm. even, you know?
Yeah.
So I just thought that was odd.
Yeah. And CBS didn't even let me go that far, I'll add.
There you go. So,
but
you have a sense, I'm sure, of what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it's certainly not enough to get me to subscribe to a whole new subscription service.
Right.
Honestly, though, but if it was on Netflix or something I already subscribed to, or if it was on TV, I might give it one more shot. Because like I said with that Netflix show, I wasn't hooked by episode one, but I did give it episode two to see, and I'm not going to get that opportunity. So, I mean, I realize I'm like Homer telling Mo he just lost a customer. No one cares. But.
Well, I guess this is a good place to mention that I'll be joining my friend Chris Clow on a new podcast called The Discovery Debrief, which is going to be a weekly discussion about each new episode of Star Trek Discovery.
Zachy, yes. Now I got to watch it.
So because I clearly don't have enough podcasts that I've committed to, I'm like, sure, why not one more?
Dude, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
I just locked this in about an hour and a half ago.
So. Great. Well, I will certainly look forward to listening to you guys talk about the episode I saw.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on to an interview I did with director Hani Abu Assad, and this is about a movie called The Mountain Between Us. Have you heard of this one?
I have.
Yeah, it's kind of a survival story starring Idris Elba and Kate Winslet as they are two strangers who book a, you know, single engine plane to get them through Colorado, and the plane crashes, and so they're stuck on the mountain and they have to somehow find a way back to civilization.
Right, it's based on a popular book, I believe, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
And I have not seen the film. I've seen clips from it, and it certainly looks engaging.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be coming out like October 5th, so but before our next episode probably. So I had a chance to talk to Hani, and I thought it made for an interesting conversation. So let's go ahead and play that here.
Talk about the process of deciding that this is a film that you want to make. Because, I mean, it seems... of a piece, but also very different from the stuff that you've done previously. So how do you decide? Okay, this is going to be my next project.
Actually, I'm going to turn this around. Actually, it's simple. It has to have a story that appeals to masses, high concept, but meaningful high concept, that you can use that platform of popularity in order to spread wisdom and consciousness. So yes, I mean, this is very simple. This story is a survival story. It's a very, you know, high appealing, high concept. A lot of people will feel like want to see this movie.
Yeah.
But in a poetic way, I can explore the meaning of life. Sure. Why? What is our meaning of life? Is it surviving, or is it serving? And if it's just surviving, why would a soldier go and sacrifice himself? For?
Sure. Is there something bigger than just the individual?
I think there, for most of us, there is something bigger. For some of us, they are self-centered.
Sure.
And they think that nothing comes the self-interest is the most important thing in life. But every time others prove to me that this is wrong, and it's like without people who sacrifice and serve themselves, because nowadays serving is becoming a very filthy word.
Sure.
But without people who serve, we are nothing. Humanity is still like we would be like out like we will be like banished from this earth
if we weren't working for other people
and had a higher a meaning of life, rather. Yeah, exactly. So yes, back to the question, what I the process is when I feel like the story is appealing, but there is also meaningful platform to explore the meaning of life. This is ideal.
Yeah.
In a very poetic way, you don't need to lecture people in the film about the meaning of life, you know, but you can let them feel that there is something bigger than just surviving. And let them think also about it.
You mentioned earlier this idea of work being a service. Do you see your work as a filmmaker as something that can potentially be doing a service to the world in terms of illuminating perspectives that are not given a voice usually? I mean, obviously being a filmmaker from the Middle East, I mean, that's something that we don't have very many of, you know, and you have, I'm sure, experiences that you would like to share with the world. Is that something you see film as being a vehicle for?
Not just film, actually, art and also journalism. The people who decide to serve for the, you know, the truth, even truth, the truth is like, you know, it's a very elastic.
Yeah. Especially these days.
Yeah. But still, like, you serving for any, like, you know, serving in the hospital, serving your family, serving fellow human beings in their entertainment or in their wisdom. This is serving, yes. And I am part of that process of serving. And I like to serve, not just in the sense of art, but also I like to cook for others and to see that they are eating, you know, for people I love. I love it. I love when I see people I love eating, or friends that I, from food that I cook.
Yeah.
This is like, I love to, you know, to take my family to vacation and, you know, bring them like good quality life, not in the sense of materials, but you know that they explore new places. And so yes, I love to serve, and I love also not just that. I think meaning of life is bigger than just serving, but also understanding. In art, you are spreading a better understanding of yourself and others, but also communication. I find meaning of life is also a kind of communication. How we communicate, in which language.
Sure.
Not the spoken language, but in which values of language.
Sure.
can we communicate and have a better, yeah, better understanding. So all these things I am doing through my art, sure, because I think this is a higher, like, I, you know what I said to myself once, I'm ready to die if I can understand the secret of life.
Sure.
I'm ready to die now if somebody will tell me, just give me
once
the choice.
You know that.
I will give you the secret of life. Why we are here, where sure. we come from, where are we going to? A certainty, let's say, to yeah. the meaning of life. And but you will die after. I will choose that.
Sure.
To know and die after.
To so know with that
means
certainty.
That surviving for me is not the issue. It's yeah. like the understanding is the issue.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just everything you're describing, I mean, from the footage we've seen of the film, it seems like it's a good metaphor for all of these concepts, right? Where you essentially have two people who are relying on each other, you know, and that's the premise of the film is how can you trust a stranger to look out for you, to look out for each other? I think what I sort of glommed onto was having somebody like Idris Elba, and obviously he's this virile, handsome man, but he's also he's also black, and I think that's fascinating to me, that it adds this interesting racial element to the romance that wasn't there previously. And I think that's a statement. Like, I don't know that I have a question. I just think that's a fascinating statement.
It's very... It's actually... I mean, I can't say it loudly, but it's my statement of doing actually the first Hollywood movie
yeah.
that has a romance and it's colorblind.
Yeah.
In the sense there is like stories about, but it's an issue all the time.
Right.
Yes?
This doesn't acknowledge.
Doesn't mean like it doesn't exist.
Right.
But at least what you do as an artist, presenting an image
yeah.
that should, this is what it should be. This is what should be a romance, is
yeah.
a colorblind.
Right.
So I am doing the first romance.
Yeah.
For big, not a small movie. There is a small movie.
Sure.
Done, but Hollywood movie,
big mainstream.
Budget, big mainstream, a romance, colorblind, where the colors is not an issue at all.
Yeah.
At all. You know,
and it shouldn't be, because the truth is...
And it
is,
shouldn't be, exactly.
I mean, who wouldn't fall in love with Idris Elba?
No, but not that, but I think what you can do in cinema, and this is my hidden mission, which is you can change perception.
Yeah.
And that presentation of, and you can see, you can watch how beautiful the images
yeah.
of these two people.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter their colors, but they are very beautiful. Where you create a kind of identification from the both sides
yeah.
to recognize that image as a beauty where you want to be belonging to,
right.
without dictating you, you know, like lecturing you, like, oh, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
No. It's like just an image can change perception more than tons of lectures.
Absolutely.
Because this is a beauty. When you present it as a beauty, something that you want to, it's a beauty.
Yeah.
Like, look to the image, you saw the images.
Right.
It's a beauty. Yeah. Like, like when they are both together.
Mm-hmm.
So that presentation of beauty in a colorblind romance
yeah.
can help in changing perception.
Hopefully.
I'm going to be also modest, like hopefully.
Hopefully. Well, thank you so much, Henry. I really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank
Take
you.
Take care.
Thank
Good luck with the film. Okay.
Okay, so look for The Mountain Between Us to hit theaters on October 6th.
You ever feel like there's a mountain between us?
I do, Brian. That's really all this show is. It's just kind of therapy. It's us working through, trying to cut through that mountain.
Yeah.
You know?
Ain't no mountain high enough.
That's I'm the Idris Elba in this whole thing.
Hmm. And I'm the Kate Winslet?
Which I guess by default that makes you Kate Winslet.
I'll never let go, Zachy.
And I'm going to draw you now, so. Well, I gotcha. All right, while I get my pad and paper out, why don't we take a little break? and get some letters.
Okay, we're back, and hey, Brian, we got some listener letters.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do this. So this is from Maddie Feck, and he says, call me selfish, but I wish the actual it discussion went deeper and longer. And then he added, at the same time you thought it, that's what she said.
And I did.
Well, Maddie, it's nice that you want that, but I'm sorry. Can't do anything about it. No, I'm just kidding.
Moving on. No, I really appreciate that. I enjoyed our conversation. I enjoyed talking about that movie. I felt like we had plenty to say, and I feel like we covered a lot of ground on it. But yeah, are you going to start an It podcast?
Why not, right? So, I mean, as far as It, the movie goes, I think I said this before, the problem with going too deep and long is we're like 13 years old, clearly, right? We're going to keep laughing at that. I think the problem is it's we're talking about an unfinished story.
Right.
And, I mean, I think they just announced when the sequel's coming out, right?
September 6th, 2019. So, yeah.
2019. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Wow, okay. So, two years. That's kind of surprising that they're waiting that long, to be honest.
I am surprised it's not going to be about a year, yeah.
That now, is it odd to you that they didn't shoot it, like, all at once? Because that seems like the norm.
Yeah, because it wasn't... I mean, I wonder if they were like, let's see how this one performs. But like you said, I mean, this movie does... It does stand on its own in an enjoyable way, but it does leave a lot. You realize there's more story to be wrapped up.
Yeah.
Right. So you wonder if it was sort of a test to see how it does, but at the same time, they had to know they were going to do it. Maybe this is going to determine a bigger budget. I don't know. Or, you know, some of the actors, it seems like they have some people already in mind that they want, and maybe this has to do with scheduling.
Oh, good point. If they haven't already put an offer to Amy Adams to play Beverly.
Oh, see, it's funny because I think they're have their sights set on Jessica Chastain.
I believe that. But it, come on, look at, she's like a little Amy Adams. She's like little mini Amy.
I see it. I see it. It's funny too because I enjoyed the story and I'm so curious where it's going because I haven't read it. I haven't seen the miniseries. I was debating reading the book. And it's been a long time since I've had time to read a book. And I saw it at the store, and it was so hefty. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
There's words in it.
2019.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that I held off on rewatching the miniseries. And I'm like, do I want to just hold off completely? Because I don't want to, like, whatever I remember about the miniseries is long enough ago that I feel like I could still have some surprises when I watch the movie. You know?
Right. I think, you know, this is a whole separate discussion, but when there's a popular book and it becomes a film. Okay, so yeah, this is my question to you. Do you read the book first? Like, what do you look at as the official thing you want to view first? I mean, Do you think the book would spoil your movie experience, or do you think you'd rather have the book experience first and then see the movie and their take on the thing that
that's
it's based
a really
on?
Good question. If it's based on a real event that the book is documenting, I prefer to take that in so that I have a historical context for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? No, it depends, honestly, because like, I'm thinking of, like, Dunkirk, for example. I went to Dunkirk completely cold because I didn't want to know what actually happened. And then afterwards, I read up on it.
I see. Yep.
I think for me, it's more of a time factor these days, honestly. What would I have time for? Like, I listened to the audiobook of The Martian before I saw the movie. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a rare thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm listening to The Disaster Artist right now. I mentioned that earlier.
Right.
That's rare for me. You know?
Yeah.
I tend to go at it movie first and then find out the divergences after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Divergent, there's a series where they split it up into multiple parts and nothing happened.
Yeah. I don't even know where that's...
That's one of those things where the third one was... They split it in two deliberately, and then the part... Like, movie three, part one flopped so spectacularly that they never even bothered doing the second half.
Yeah, well, they said that they're going to try to finish it as a TV series, and then Shailene Woodley is like, what? I didn't send for a TV series.
not with me or not, and you know, and Miles Teller and all these people. And that's the thing. I mean, let's assume that does happen. It'll be something totally different from the movies, right?
Right, right.
And I'm like, you morons at Lionsgate. If you think about it, even if you did not split up number three and you just made it one movie, and even if it tanks, okay, whatever, you've finished the series.
Mm-hmm.
And you can market the complete Divergent and sell it from now until people stop caring, which apparently was like 4 years ago, but still.
Right.
But I mean, now it's like it's unfinished forever.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And it didn't have to be.
Right.
Yep.
You know, they went out, they tried to go after the Harry Potter model.
Yep.
And this ain't Harry Potter, boo. I don't know why I said boo. I don't know why I did that. I've never done that in my life. Another letter. This is from Derek via Facebook, and he asks, this is an interesting one, actually. When you think about Goodfellas losing the Oscar to Dances with Wolves or Raging Bull losing to Ordinary People, what are some movies you think got totally robbed of Best Picture Oscars?
Oh, man.
And that's kind of, you know, like when you think about, like, the judgment of history is often very different from the immediate Oscar judgment. You know what I mean?
Wait, say it again?
Like the sort of veneer of credibility that comes from here is your Best Picture Oscar, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That doesn't really always matter in the long run historically.
Yes.
Right? And I'm thinking of, I mean, these are good examples, although I like Dances with Wolves personally. I like Ordinary People too, actually, but like, you know, here's a good example, Crash.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's a movie that I feel like people forgot about it, like, within a month of it winning Best Picture.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, the one people reference the most often, right, as the Best Picture.
So why did it win? Didn't people think of it as heavy-handed and kind of ridiculous even back then?
You know what's funny? I read an article, and I can't recall where it was, behind why it won Best Picture. And one of the things was it was one of the first movies to send everybody a copy of the DVD.
And that's interesting.
Yeah, because it was already out on DVD. Like, it already existed. Like, they didn't have to press them. So they ponied up however much it cost, sent it to everybody, and they said it cost, what, like $100,000 or something for winning an Oscar and then making even more because people then went and sought it out. So it definitely paid off and set a new model.
I wonder, honestly, if some of it was also that it gave a credible movie to vote for in lieu of voting for Brokeback Mountain.
Is that same year?
That was the same year.
Interesting.
Because if I recall, Ang Lee won Best Director that year.
I remember that, yes.
Right? So how much of it was perhaps the sort of latent homophobia in the, like, oh, we need to, we like, what can we vote for instead of Brokeback Mountain?
Yeah.
And here's this anti-racism. Well, it's like the anti-racism movie. We got to vote for it. Come on. It's against racism.
Right.
Pro-racism, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And another one that people mention a lot is Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction and Shawshank Redemption. What do you think about that? Same year.
Well, wait. Shawshank was the year before, I thought.
I think it's the same year.
Was it? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. So of those three, Pulp Fiction, Shawshank, and Forrest Gump, which do you think has had the longest life historically? Longest afterlife?
I lean toward Pulp Fiction, but Shawshank, I'm amazed at the life Shawshank has had after it underperformed in theaters.
Right.
And it's one of those ones on the IMDb, you know, top 100 or whatever it is. It's always number one, apparently.
It's always there.
Yeah, it's always bobbing around 1, 2, and 3. So, I mean, it's beloved, right? For a movie that no one saw in the theater, it's become this beloved classic. So I find that interesting. I love Pulp Fiction personally. I think it's, I don't think it's a perfect movie. I do think it's Quentin Tarantino's best movie. It sags a little in the middle, but for the most part, like, I really like that movie still. But
so do you, Brian. Come on, let's talk.
That's sad how true that actually is. Forrest Gump's a weird one, honestly, because people really hate on that movie now. And
it's become popular to hate, and I can't bring myself to hate it.
I don't hate it.
Well, I mean, you know what it is, Brian? I mean, there's a cynical reading where you say, what is it about? It's about if you just shut up and do what you're told, great things will happen. But if you rebel a little bit, well, you'll get, like, God's wrath and you'll die horribly. Which I can't fault that reason. I can't fault that reading.
I don't know. I don't know. I've never even looked at it. I guess I haven't scrutinized it like that. I just sort of took it for the story that it was. She had a rough life and it caught up with her, and it was
like I feel like this is surface level enough where it's not one of those things where, like, you know, we talked about Raiders of the Lost Ark where it's like, oh, well, Indiana Jones doesn't do anything like that. That's a very, like, you're sort of jumping through hoops to make this, like, to seem clever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is more surface level than Forrest Gump where it's like, that is kind of the message, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, again, I haven't seen it as in years, so I don't know. Maybe I'd read it differently now.
Yeah. Than when I was young. I should revisit it, too.
Yeah. Right? Now I'm kind of curious to see if this is younger Brian just sort of like, yeah, this is a fun movie.
Right. So, yeah, I haven't seen it in easily 15 years at this point.
Oh, same. Yeah.
Yeah. So... TBD. This is going to be continued at some point.
I'm kind of curious now because, yeah, I think my immediate take on all those responses is like, oh, you guys are just being, like, cynical and whatnot. But I don't know. Maybe they're onto something. We'll find out.
We'll find out, yeah.
Yeah.
But until then, we do have some headlines, Brian.
See.
So this is some big news here. This is, like, just breaking right now, and it is that Ain't It Cool News has seen a mass exodus of its writers after sexual assault allegations surfaced about Harry Knowles.
Yeah. This was sort of a surprise.
Well,
right?
surprise, obviously, about Harry Knowles doing this, but surprise number two, that Ain't It Cool News exists still.
I know. Yeah, not surprised.
Nobody told their web designer
blue.
That they still
out
exist.
Out of the blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can be somebody who is into movie news on the internet without Ain't It Cool News having crossed your path at some point.
For sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, thinking back to like 20 years ago, I mean, Ain't It Cool News was it. It was the tree from whence all these other sites sprang.
Absolutely. Yep.
And it's kind of weird in hindsight, the kind of out of proportion importance Harry Knowles was given.
Yeah, there was a time.
Right.
Where studios sort of bowed to this guy.
I mean, Roger Ebert would champion him. It's really strange. Because the truth of it is that Ain't It Cool News, to me at least, was the site you went to despite Harry Knowles.
Yeah.
Right? Am I wrong?
No. Even in the comments, it seemed that was commonplace for everyone to sort of poke or make fun of him.
So apparently, this is like 20 years ago, he would just like randomly go up to people and start groping them.
Yeah, that's what's being alleged here, and it's
and disturbing. This happens, by the way, just shortly after similar allegations were made about Devin Faraci over at Birth Movies Death. So it seems like a common thing that there's like at worst sexual predators, at best borderline sociopaths. Who are sort of populating the nerd corners of the internet, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I thought it was interesting, too, when his two, I mean, longtime writers decided to jump ship. At first, I was thinking, oh, that's really fast when these are allegations.
Yeah, right.
But then it makes me wonder, like, well, I don't know, maybe they know something we don't or already had some feelings and this was all they needed, or I don't know.
I mean, look, it was a fast response. The stuff he's being accused of, like, you read it, right? And you're like, who does that? That's, like, my response.
Yes.
Unless there's something wrong with you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, he came up to me, and he just randomly reached under my shirt. Well, normal people don't do that.
Right, right.
That's not a thing that's deemed acceptable social behavior. So there's guys, so my point is this. It's not just a one-off thing if you're doing that.
Correct. And right. What's being alleged here isn't just one thing. It's multiple times.
That's right.
Yeah.
So kind of a weird situation. I will say, and I mentioned this earlier on my Facebook, is, I mean, I read the review that Harry Knowles wrote for Blade 2 back in 2002.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to read even a little bit of it on here, because it's he says it's NC-17. Just Google Harry Knowles Blade 2 or Ain't It Cool News Blade 2. It'll come up.
Mm.
It's like legendary. You'll read, you know, three paragraphs and you'll want to take a shower, you know.
Right.
And just you'll feel unclean.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I read that in O2. I'm like, this guy sounds like a borderline predator.
Right.
So I'm a little bit surprised by this, but like when this news breaks, I'm like, okay.
Right. Right. I'm,
you know, connecting some dots.
It's funny, when you made that connection, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was creepy and weird.
that was sort of legendary, that review, you know?
Yeah.
But like I said, if you haven't read it, you've got something waiting for you.
Right, right.
You're welcome. Heat up some hot chocolate and just sit down in your lazy chair.
Yeah.
Get wrapped up in your Snuggie and do some reading.
Yep.
There is other news, Brian. There's no way to segue from Harry Knowles. Right. So let's just move on. What else is going on?
Well, we said the day would never come, Zachy, but Avatar 2 has begun shooting.
Has it, though, really? Has it, Brian?
Well, according to...
Jim Cameron. Yeah.
That was one of the only sitcoms I ever saw taped live, by the way.
Really? You must be very proud.
Yeah, it was all right.
It'd be funny if you had a choice for something else and that. It's like, oh, well, I can see the last season of Frasier or this According to Jim. And you're like, I'm going to go with Belushi. I don't know. I got a feeling about this guy, you know. I don't know if those two shows overlapped, but.
I don't know if they did either. And then as long as we're talking about it, in between, they have a person who keeps the audience interested and tells jokes and keeps them warmed up. Because, you know, it takes time to set up the cameras and move things around and whatnot and keep the audience engaged and not get bored. Because the process is very long. It takes 5 hours, sometimes more, to tape these shows. And so they had a stupid human tricks portion. And my friends urged me to go do it. And I was like, I don't have a stupid human trick. And they just go do it. So I go up to the front in front of the whole studio audience of According to Jim. And the person in front of me is a human beatbox. Which, nothing is ever cooler than a human beatbox. So I have to follow the human beatbox. Anyway, I ended up doing this. It's hard to explain over radio here, but I did this weird trick with my arms. I thought of it right on the fly. This trick I can kind of do with my arms where I clasp my hands and twist my arms inside out and put my head through my arms. And I was like, this is so embarrassing. Everyone's just
this is some great audio, by the way.
I know. Everyone's going to be scratching their heads in the audience and whatever. But ends up, everybody was like, how did that boy do that? And then I saw this whole studio audience reach their hands out, clasp their fists, and try to stick their heads through their twisted arms. And I ended up winning a Snickers bar.
Really?
Yeah. All that to say, Avatar 2 is started production in Australia. And apparently, what? December 18th, 2020 for Avatar 2. Avatar 3 coming out December 17th, 2021. Oh, so these are like right back to back. Avatar 4, oh my gosh, this is not a joke. Avatar 4, December 20th, 2024. What is that, 3 years after? Then Avatar 5. Avatar 5, December 19th, 2025.
I'm exhausted hearing you list that out.
Isn't that interesting? So 20 and 2021, then a gap of 3 years, then 2024 and 2025.
That seems... excessive. That, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing to say, you know.
No, I don't have anything to say. And this was some interesting news. I thought I had not heard this. You weren't familiar with this either. I learned about this morning, but apparently James Patterson, who writes thriller novels, is co-writing a thriller novel with President Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton. That's something. It's called The President is Missing. Now, Showtime was like, we're getting in on this President Bill Clinton action here, and they are already developing it as a series. So
Does Clinton have designs on starring in it himself?
That would be... I would subscribe to Showtime for that.
Right. I got this idea for this show. I'll travel the country, travel the world, solving mysteries. You know, like, I'll get a hot chick every episode.
Yeah. You know? Bam!
I feel like he watched Kingsman and, yes, like, came up with the idea, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah, well, anyway, but I thought this was kind of interesting. I mean, the way they try to sell it here, the press release, Showtime press release here, which, by the way, the book's going to be published in 2018, but it says, in the book, President Clinton and Patterson tell the startling story of a sitting U.S. president's disappearance with the level of detail that only someone who has held the office could know, generating a powerful, one-of-a-kind thriller.
That's really funny.
I got to admit, that's kind of interesting to me. You know? I mean, a story about the president told by a president. But it is, yeah, there, well, is something sort of humorous, like you just said about, like, yeah, and then he kicks ass on Air Force One. And,
you know what I wonder? If had Hillary won, would he still do this?
I don't know. Well, I mean, right? Yeah, I don't know. Published in 2018, that means it has to be written, or at least, you know, being.
It was sitting in a drawer, right, I think.
What did you say?
It was sitting in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, dude, that is hilarious.
That's, yeah. I mean, hey, why not? You know, like, Bill Clinton has earned it.
Yeah, I've got to say, I mean, at the very least, I will watch episode one of this for sure.
The President is Missing, it's called.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So, yeah, it'll be funny, you know, the president waking up at dawn and doing Tai Chi on the lawn. And I'm just curious in his mind what it, like, a badass president is. You know?
How about if I mean, if the president does it, like, he keeps talking about him in the first person. Yeah. So then I get with this chick. I mean, the president gets with this chick and.
Yeah, yeah. She's a spy, see? But I knew that already, because pow! See, that's what I want, but I have to calibrate, because that's not what it's going to be.
I know. I'm more excited. Like, we're describing, like, the Conan O'Brien sketch version.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll check it out. Even if it's not, I will be a little bit disappointed if it doesn't measure up to what we're seeing in our head.
Yeah, agreed.
But what do we do? I'm hearing some music, Brian.
Oh, what's that? Oh, is it Star Wars time?
I think it is, Brian.
That just felt like the future, Conan.
Yeah, exactly.
So Star Wars, it's kind of slow news this week.
Yeah, not that much going on. I saw that Mark Hamill gave this lengthy interview at StarWars.com. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, there's no, like... massive, you know, he doesn't drop anything, because obviously if you're talking to StarWars.com, it's going to be the most sort of neutral interview.
Right.
But I would recommend checking it out. It's a really good insight into just his own background as a fan. I mean, that's like the coolest thing about Mark Hamill, is that he's never stopped being a fan of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just really cool. And, you know, even when he did the first movie, he came at it as a Star Wars fan. And so, he talks about his sort of geek influences and whatnot. It's a lengthy interview, but it's worth reading.
I'll check that out. Yeah, he was on Nerdist.
Yes.
Several months ago, and that was worth listening to. I just enjoyed, I don't know a lot about Mark Hamill, really, right? And so it's right, kind of cool hearing what he's like, and yeah. It seems like, like you say, like a true geek, which is kind of fun.
A true geek, exactly.
Yeah.
I did see something kind of interesting that Ron Howard shared some vague pictures on Instagram of, yes, what looked like what could be the spice mines of Kessel.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So dare I say we will get the famous Kessel Run incident?
You have to assume, right?
Well, I've said this before about this Han Solo movie. It's like, it's going to be a checklist of, like, soloisms.
Right.
So we'll get he won the Millennium Falcon, and it'll be like one afternoon, just like Young Indiana Jones.
Yes.
In one morning, everything happens. That's what this is going to be. It's like we check off winning the Millennium Falcon, and the Kessel Run, meeting Chewbacca, probably. Yes. Like, you can kind of imagine what he's, you know.
Some sort of, like, religious figure at a space station. He's like, little hokey, don't you think?
Yeah. Although, I don't know if you heard this. Apparently, Darth Vader will be in the Han Solo movie.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense. I mean, he exists in that time, right? So, I mean, I don't know.
You're not feeling a little bit like, all right, come on, guys.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, but I get it. Honestly, I do. I hope it's cool and not hackneyed and shoehorned.
Do you kind of feel like after the reception he got in Rogue One, now they're just desperate to squeeze him in wherever they can?
Yeah, I don't know. I like, we have yet to see the bad Star Wars film. There's been maybe the underwhelming.
Sure.
And maybe even not even underwhelming, just, oh, yeah, it was fine. Right. So I haven't seen a bad one yet. Once we see the bad one, then I'll get maybe a little more.
Well, like, please, oh, God, don't let this be the bad one.
No,
let,
no,
let the Han Solo movie be awesome, you know?
Oh, also, we didn't have it written down here, but Rian Johnson posted that they wrapped episode 8. So Last Jedi's in the can.
That's pretty nuts.
Yeah, so it'll just be sitting on a shelf for a couple months.
And meanwhile, J.J. Abrams is busy at work putting the next. I was going to say putting the finishing touches on the next one, but he hasn't even started. So
yeah,
that's going to be a thing.
And it, knowing that also that episode 8 is wrapped, Rian Johnson could have done it. Seems. I'm sure he's probably burnt out, but
yeah, he probably wants to take a break. Yeah,
yeah.
But there will be more Star Wars news in the weeks and months ahead. I did want to share, though, this letter that we got from Jeff Jordan, and it's more Star Wars-centric, so I thought we can drop it here.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asks about the Star Wars prequels, which are, of course, a topic that tends to come up in Star Wars fandom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote a very lengthy thing, and he got into a lot of points. I'm gonna sort of cut to the quick here for the purpose of time. And he says, in regards to the Star Wars prequels, he says, for good or bad, I'm of the mind that the prequels will forever remain in a class of their own because of the eternally low bar that they set. Yet at the same time, I have to imagine that Disney is aware of how tricky it must be to market the prequels at face value, given the chasm of disparity that exists on a qualitative level when you compare them to the rest of the Star Wars brand. Right now, I think jilted Star Wars fans are in their venting phase, much like Batman fans were after the release of Batman and Robin in 97. But once the dust settles in the next few years or so, do you think it's possible for such a reconciliation to occur that Disney/Lucasfilm could find yet another rich marketing vein to tap into vis-a-vis the prequels? And what he says is, rather than sold and marketed as high-minded extensions to the Star Wars saga, maybe they could be marketed in much the same way you see with Showgirls or Mac and Me or Sharknado. Having enjoyed listening to your podcast commentaries on your podcast, I'm curious what your thoughts are. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Jeff. First, I don't see Disney ever denigrating the prequels.
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking, I was like, wow, that's a really interesting thought.
Yeah.
And if it was any other film series, possibly.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think they would ever want any of what is this. They're completely connected to each other. So they wouldn't want anything that's connected to what they're currently doing to be seen as less than.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, and Jeff earlier in his note, he brought up, for example, the Adam West Batman show, which was for a while it became kind of denigrated, and then it became beloved, and you know, in kind of a campy cult way where you watch it and you laugh at it. Right. And he brought up like Rocky Horror Picture Show or Mystery Science Theater or whatever. And those are, I think the difference is, for example, we can look at the Adam West Batman and enjoy it for what it is and laugh at the jokes and whatever. But it has no bearing on anything that's currently happening with the brand, because the character, each, like, audiences have become conditioned to recognize that each version of Batman is distinct from the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Star Wars, honestly, this might sound strange coming from me of all people. Honestly, at this point, I think when it comes to the prequels, I think Star Wars fans need to get over it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I
maybe
say
that
this,
comes with time and age or whatever, but yeah.
I mean, and I say this as somebody who even now I have problems with those films.
Yeah.
But you know what? There's plenty of Star Wars for you. If you don't like the prequels, there's plenty of other stuff that you can like.
Yeah. Like, I think I've gotten there too.
Yeah. You know, and I think as far as Disney goes, I mean, they're still making money off the prequels. The Clone Wars series, which granted is not on anymore, but that, you know,
that's a source of income. There's action figures. There's you name it. And the truth of it is that the films such as Rogue One, which we just saw, will continue to draw on them. I mean, you know, Rogue One is a bridge between the prequels and A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
We got Jimmy Smits in there, etc. I think it's even if we don't live in that milieu anymore, it's still going to be something to draw from. And by the way, would you, Brian Hall, be opposed to new films set during that era?
No.
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 Because it was never the setting that was the problem. It was the execution always.
Right.
Right? We're never like, oh, the Republic era is so uninteresting. We're like, oh, the dialogue that Hayden Christensen says is terrible.
Right.
Well, that would be terrible if it was set 30 years after Return of the Jedi 2.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, this sounds bad, but I mean, it was always George Lucas that was kind of the problem, if you choose to see it that way.
Yeah, yeah. We just didn't like the execution.
The execution. Yeah. So, you know, I think the prequels, I think, honestly, Disney doesn't need to do all that to make people come around to the prequels, because I think that separation exists only in the mind of the fans, not in the minds of the corporation.
Right.
As far as Disney is concerned, it's all Star Wars. It's all stuff. It's a playground to pull from. That's the whole point of these Star Wars stories, is they can live in any era,
mm-hmm.
and do something with it. And I've said this before. I mean, the Clone Wars show proves you can tell compelling, interesting stories set in that era.
Right.
And all of this is a good way of saying, hey, listen to our Star Wars Phantom Menace commentary, which is coming up shortly. I think we're shooting for Thanksgiving, if our previous history isn't any go by. And we'll have stuff to say.
Yeah. I mean, even considering what you just said now, I mean, our opinions have evolved over 15, 17, whatever it is, years.
That's right.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about it with you.
That's going
to
be a fun one. Well, thank you, Jeff, for that. And that's a good place to take a break. Brian, when we come back, we'll talk Kingsman: The Golden Circle, which is in theaters now.
Let's do it.
And we're back, Brian, and Kingsman: The Golden Circle is in theaters now. Now, refresh my memory a little bit. I remember you liking Kingsman: The Secret Service when it came out two long years ago.
Yeah, I did. It was one of those movies where it's not based on anything I know. I guess it's based on a comic, right? I don't know.
It's very loosely based on a comic, from what I understand.
Okay, I had no familiar ties to this thing. I just went in expecting a certain thing. I expected sort of another spy movie, British spy movie, but then it subverted all that by being a little bonkers.
Yes.
And so I found it a pleasant surprise. I really enjoyed the first Kingsman.
Yeah, me too. I actually revisited it just this past week, and like all the warm fuzzy feelings came back to me, because I just thought it was a very well executed mid-level blockbuster type movie.
Yeah, and it did kind of what, it's not aiming for the same thing, but it did kind of what Triple X was trying to do. Where it was exactly. Like, James Bond is this thing, but we're not James Bond. We're this. Bleh. You know what I mean?
But it did it in a way that still felt respectful.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what XXX did. And this one was like, yeah, we want to tell a James Bond story, but we want to be slightly more modern, and we want to be a little crazy. And so we're going to have the things that are familiar, but we might go a little nuts here and there and have some fun. And it did just that. And I thought it did it really well.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, yeah. I think that Matthew Vaughn has a good sensibility for this kind of thing. I was surprised both by Taron Egerton, who I'd never seen before, and who really won me over.
Yeah.
And Colin Firth, who I'd never seen like this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, doing the action hero thing. And so both of them really won me over, and it was a very solid, pleasant surprise.
Yep.
The first Kingsman. So here we are 2 years later, and as happens when you have an unexpected hit that spawns a sequel, they tend to go bigger and wider, mm-hmm. and that's what we have with Kingsman: The Golden Circle. And I'm curious. I mean, what did you think of the sequel?
Well, I mean, we said this at the beginning of the show, or no, maybe we said this off mic, but I had a really long weekend. fun weekend, but very long, entertaining friends from out of town. And I went and saw this for the show, a little worried that I was tired and that that might play into how I perceived it and whatnot. And I think it did, but I think in a good way. Because I've read a lot of people saying that, you know, they weren't crazy about it. And I definitely don't think it's as good as the first one. I think the first one, you know, any origin story is always going to be a stronger story because the character's discovering things, you're discovering things with them. So sequels, it's really hard for them to ever live up to the original. And this is the case, I think, with this one, too, for reasons we'll get more into. But at the same time, even during the film, I was thinking that, like, well, you know, I'm not as interested in this. Why are we diverging here? I don't really care about this as much, da-da-da-da-da. But then by the time it wrapped up and as I was walking home from the theater, and even an hour later, I was just kind of had a smile on my face from it. And right. I was like, you know, I had fun. So, yeah, it's not as good as the first one, but I still had fun with it. And I think, especially if you're a fan of the first one, I think, know that. No, that's not as good as the first one, but I think it's fun being in that world. So,
you know what? I mean, you pretty much stated my opinion exactly.
Yeah.
So that's it for this episode, everybody. do we want to talk spoilers?
Yeah, I was gonna say with apologies to Maddie Feck.
That's right. I know. We're gonna go even shorter for this one. You know what? Let's talk some spoilers.
Let's do it.
Spoilers.
Yeah, I'm basically right there with you. I went in, and I feel like maybe I was more forgiving of this than a lot of critics. I haven't really taken a hard look at like Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, but just anecdotally online, a lot of people are like, man, I can't remember the last time I was so disappointed at a movie and this and that. And what did you go in expecting? You know,
I agree with you. Forgiving is a good word because there were a lot of times during the movie I was thinking I don't really enjoy this excursion. This thing's kind of weird. But when it was over, I still liked it. Like, I still enjoyed myself. Like, I left having had a good time.
So you know, one thing I have to say is that the marketing has basically made this look like it's a team up between Taron Egerton and Channing Tatum.
Yes.
And that is just a bald-faced lie. Because Channing Tatum, to call his role a cameo is being generous. It's essentially an extended cameo.
Yeah, he probably shot it in 2 days.
Doesn't it feel like that? It almost feels like he was doing something else on the lot, and they were like, hey, just come over. You can hang out with Jeff Bridges.
Right.
And he's like, Jeff Bridges? Well,
I mean, we're in spoiler territory here. It seems like they try to set it up like he's going to be a co-star in the third film.
That's correct, right. Or I was thinking more of like a spinoff.
Oh.
You know.
Do you have any
watching like Statesman?
But it showed him showing up in
That's right. As I was talking. You know what I'm wondering is okay, you know what, we're like jumping. Let's get there. Number one, the trailers did a huge disservice because they put not just Channing Tatum front and center, but Colin Firth.
That's a tough one. I admit, if I was the filmmaker, I wouldn't want everyone to know that he's back because in the first one, he dies, and it's tragic because enjoy the connection between him and Eggsy, right?
Yeah.
So he's a selling point for me with these movies, and I remember thinking, damn, like if they make a sequel, I'm going to miss that character a lot. So, I mean, if you're Fox, of course you want people to know to show up for the thing that they liked from the first film, but I also understand it'd be a better surprise.
I mean, I feel like you could put Colin Firth in the trailers without showing him essentially in action alongside Taron Egerton.
Oh, like just show him in that padded room?
Yeah, so give us a tease, like, how is he back? What's going on? Because from the trailers, you're like, all right, it's just a technicality to get him back in action, you know?
Right?
And that feels like a miscalculation. I know Matthew Vaughn was none too thrilled about that.
Mm-hmm. Understandably,
That being said, I was genuinely surprised how well they pulled off his resurrection.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I wasn't at no point was I pulled out of it. I was like, okay, You know?
Yeah, and they did a good job with, I mean, they go with the amnesia route, right? Like, he's shot, he gets healed, he's got amnesia for a while. And
But even before that, where Halle Berry has this, like, headshot gel, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes no sense, you know?
This movie is just bonkers enough. As she was saying it, I started to snicker.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's what this movie is.
That's right.
Right? Like, this magic healing gel that has nano blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But what I love, too, is that a movie that is so silly and ridiculous, and at times even juvenile, having the Colin Firth character and Taron Egerton, so Eggsy and whatever, their moments really plucked my heartstrings. Like, I really bought their sort of, you know, paternal sort of relationship, or mentor mentee, whatever you want to call it. Like, I it really works for me, like the drama of it, the actual story of it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because we're at a point, like, I remember watching the first Kingsman. I think I told you about this when we talked about it. I was like watching the movie as it was going, I was doing the math, and I was like, well, Colin Firth's gonna have to die.
No, interesting.
Like, I was moving the chess pieces around, and I was like, in order for this movie to get where it needs to go, Colin Firth has to die. I remember that thought. So it wasn't a shock. It was sad when he died, but it wasn't a shock. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So to some extent with this, and the reason I had that thought was I was like, yeah, because if you remember, Eggsy is brought in to replace Lancelot.
Mm-hmm.
Who is killed in the first scene of the film, right? So they have to replace that slot. And it's between him and that girl. The girl gets it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, okay, she's Lancelot, but we know Eggsy has to be... Like, the movie's not going to end with him not being a Kingsman.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, he's obviously going to be Galahad.
Mm.
That's the only thing that makes sense, right?
That's pretty good. I don't recall thinking that. Yeah.
I very distinctly remember that thought. But with this one, I'm like reverse engineering it. I'm like, okay, so now we have two Galahads. So how's this going to go?
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was, well, they're going to have to reform Kingsman. And I'm guessing Colin Firth would be the new Arthur.
Okay.
But they surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they end with Eggsy, one assumes, retiring.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know about you, but that was like kind of a pleasant surprise for me.
Yeah. 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 All the story stuff on their end, I was totally on board for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even his girlfriend, you know, they try to give him some drama by, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing where you have James Bond have a girlfriend.
That he actually stayed with her.
Yes. And then he's put in a moment where he has to have sex with this person to advance their mission, and he calls her like, babe, I'm so sorry, I have to have sex with this
but
person.
You know what's funny, that was the one thing I didn't like about the first one, and we can carry that over into what I didn't like about this one. I didn't like how at the end she's like, if you save the world, you'll get to, you know.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
I was like, really? And then they actually follow through on that. I was like, you know, come on.
Oh, you mean them being together?
No, I mean at the end of the first movie. It ends in the end, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Actually, you know, I remember thinking that, too, felt like a little juvenile.
A little much, right?
Yeah.
So with this one, Eggsy has to plant a tracking device inside in the bloodstream of the girlfriend of his villain, right?
Right.
And so in order to do that, he has to do something untoward. Digitally, I'm trying. How do we say this?
You did that pretty well, actually.
This is a clean show, but we follow the tracking as it goes up.
Yes, her, yes.
And I was like, you know, like, I don't know.
That, yes,
it made me. It rubbed me wrong in a couple different ways because I was like,
no pun intended.
Yeah, right. I wasn't even gonna say it.
Forget.
I was just gonna power through. No pun intended. It just felt like very blatant objectification in a creepy way. Like this woman, her entire role is to be, I mean, assaulted basically.
Yeah.
And killed.
Yes.
That made me uncomfortable. I don't know. Am I wrong for feeling that way?
No, I agree with you. I think that is one of the things about these movies that it's funny. I'm on board with the same things. I think the same things
I mean, the word I keep thinking of is sort of they stoop to a juvenile humor or, yes. or sensibility.
A little too much. Yeah, right?
I agree. And I don't like how those things jive with the rest of it. And that too. I remember when they had that moment and they have that sort of Fight Club, you know, CGI sort of moment with that woman. I was like, okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I did think it was interesting in that same scene where he had to call his girlfriend, or fiance, I guess, and sort of like, look, I'm just being honest
with you. That was fun.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting angle I don't think I've ever seen before. And she gets understandably upset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other things that jumped out at you, either for good or for ill?
The other thing I kind of didn't like, I didn't really care much in the end, but it did pop out to me, was when Colin Firth is back and they're in that bar. And then it was sort of like, well, he's back now. And then these rednecks like pop up out of nowhere and they're like, racist comments, punch us. I was like, I don't know. Just something about it felt really, really tacked on. Instead of like coming up with an organic way for him to prove whether or not he's back.
I think the idea, and I'm not necessarily, I'm with you that it felt a little forced. I think very obviously they were trying to set it up to be exactly like that scene in the first one and then not have it go his way.
I remember feeling like I don't want to sit through this whole thing. I kind of want to move on to something new. And it felt so out of the blue. But it did get subverted because he wasn't back 100%.
He wasn't good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
By the way, while we're on the subject, because the character Whiskey steps in, and who plays him, by the way? He was good.
What's that guy? He's from Game of Thrones.
It's Pedro Pascal.
Yes.
He was good in it.
Yeah.
But did you see his heel turn? Because I, like, called it.
Yeah. I did.
They did telegraph it a little bit.
They
right?
did, yes.
But I talking about the villains, I thought that the whole thing with Julianne Moore's character, where she like turns her victims into burgers,
mm-hmm.
that was a little like I was like,
it was a little gross.
A little gross, right?
Yeah, it was gross. I guess that's my comment on that.
it was interesting because I think I texted this to you. I was like, think The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yes, you did.
Right. And what I meant by that was the same way, like the second Austin Powers, they came at it like, oh my God, we've got the wind at our backs. So we made this little quirky thing that became a cult hit. Now that we've got the budget, let's go nuts. This felt like that.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it doubled down on the silliness.
That's right. They played some of the same beats, but bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's one of those things where it's like I don't hate The Spy Who Shagged Me, but if I'm going to watch Austin Powers, I'm going to watch the first one.
Right. Right.
I feel like that with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And it's funny because I caught a bit of the first one on TV last night. And
Kingsman,
I'm sorry, yeah, the first one. And it is funny that it ends with all these people's heads blowing up, you know, right. and like fireworks. And so it always did have that zaniness, but it felt like it was like walking the edge or straddling the line or whatever. I'm like mixing metaphors here. But yeah, this one just goes all in. Like, this person's crazy. She turns people into hamburger and meats.
makes them literally. Them
and, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a moment too at the end that I really loved because some of that stuff with Julianne Moore, she did what she was doing well, but I felt like we just kept revisiting her doing the same thing in the same location.
She felt like another version of the wacky bad guy that Sam Jackson played.
Yeah.
Like it feels like let's get a celebrity actor and give him like a quirk.
Yes. Yes. But she didn't really get out. Like Sam Jackson, I remember showing up in different locations.
That's right. She was just kind of in that diner.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So it felt a little small in a way, her whole thing.
That's true.
But I mean, the whole, you know, mechanical dogs thing was kind of fun. And I remember at the end, she has this like robot, right?
Yes.
That looks like I don't know, almost like the maid from Jetsons kind of, but like, or like a 50s diner mixed with whatever. And at the end when they had the big shootout, right, with Eggsy and then this bazooka, and then the robot's out there, and she gets blown up. And I was thinking, like, I like this. That was kind of fun. And then, oh, yeah, and then they have that briefcase that unfolds and becomes an entire, like, body shield.
That was pretty cool.
I think that's the thing. With all the things I liked and disliked throughout, at the end, it was a big, fun, rousing
ending. What'd you think of Elton John being in there?
A little mixed.
I felt like they probably got about 30% more Elton John than they really needed.
Yes, exactly that. I think him being there was very funny. Him being a prisoner of Julianne Moore's was very funny.
When he was doing like Kung Fu, I was like, all right.
Yeah, well, and then he looks directly at the camera and smiles. Yeah. I was like, I could have done without that.
It felt like Matthew Vaughn just wanted an excuse to hang out with Elton John, you know?
Yeah, and it also felt like Elton John had some ideas. Honestly, I was like, I bet he had some ideas, and they're like, sure, Elton John.
What if I drop kick him? And yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, yeah. But I did like the whole thing with the robot seeing him as a friend and how they used that.
That was clever.
I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good.
What did you think of I don't know if you would even call it political commentary of having Bruce Greenwood as this sort of right-wing president who's basically like, oh, this is a chance to for all the drug dealers are going to die. We've sort of glossed over the big scheme, which is so Julianne Moore has introduced this virus through recreational drugs that kill you within like a week or whatever unless she's paid off and she can give everybody the antidote.
Right.
So here's Bruce Greenwood just hamming it up. I mean, it's very funny because Bruce Greenwood played JFK in 13 Days. And he's like amazing as Kennedy. And then here he's just like cartoon Republican president.
Right. Know? Yeah, yeah.
And they don't even say his party, but let's be honest.
Right. I mean, yeah.
Right, you know?
Safe to assume what they're going for.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's funny because somebody was like, oh, it's a critique of Trump. I'm like, I don't think it's a critique of Trump.
No.
It's just a critique of like generic Republican politician, you know? But the whole thing where you've got this warehouse full of people in cages and stuff. I mean, it was straddling the line, man. It felt so like ridiculous. Like you wonder like how seriously can I take this, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was kind of a funny twist. The fact that he was like, "Let's," he's like, "Sure, yeah, we'll give you the money, we'll get that anecdote," and then
we'll just let him die.
Yeah, like why we get the anecdote? We're gonna kill all these, you know, dead weight around the world, druggies. Drug dealers and drug users. And I thought that was kind of a like, oh, well then if he's not gonna do it, someone's got to do it. I thought it was kind of a fun twist.
It's fun, but I was really impressed by, and I said this about the first one, how it walks this razor's edge, and it almost falls over, but it doesn't.
I mean, that's what these movies are, right? And like we said, some of the more distasteful stuff that you and I are like, eh, too far, you know, or where it takes us out of the fun. But for the most part, I feel like they've kind of figured out what they are, and they are that sort of wacky. I think that's it. Like when they stop to wink at the camera. And some of the villainous stuff maybe leans into that, or like when Elton John literally does it, that's when the movie kind of loses me. But when it does ride the line well, that's what I kind of like about it, because I can't think of any other movie that feels like this.
Right.
And like I said, I walked out with a smile on my face. It just, how much fun.
And what else can you ask for, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
the movie ends, and again, Eggsy marries the princess. We assume he's going to go off and be a prince, and his new role would seem to rule out being, you know, in another Kingsman movie.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Oh, I think, yeah, then you start with him, domestic life, but he gets called into action. I mean.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a fascinating way of moving Colin Firth back into the Galahad role.
Mm-hmm. Instead of him at headquarters.
That I fully assumed that that's what they were going to do.
Right.
You know, and as you alluded to, I mean, we end up with Tequila, played by Channing Tatum, showing up in England. Mm-hmm. So they sure seem to be teasing some kind of a team up movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, who else should we point out here? Mark Strong as Merlin. Really loved him.
I loved him. I loved him.
He yeah.
And, and his ending really worked.
I'm telling you, man, for as off the rails as these movies enjoy going, like choosing to go, those emotional beats that they want to hit really work.
That's I thought that, and it occurred to me, it's kind of like the movie is recognizing that karmically, if you get Colin Firth back, you have to lose something else in order for there still to be some emotional weight.
And it's funny because I had that same feeling. I knew it had to happen.
Yeah.
But I didn't want it to happen, and I think that's a success.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. I was kind of sad to see Roxy, the girl from the first one, get killed so quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I appreciated, too, how much they showed Eggsy ache over it.
Right.
I mean, they made a thing out of it, and I thought that was kind of cool.
By the way, totally random. I thought this was, I don't know. It's not good or bad. I just think it's interesting. When Eggsy gives the dog to Harry to get him to, you know, and then he's like, I'm going to shoot the dog. And then that's the thing that prompts his memories to come back.
Mm-hmm.
The music is not just evocative of, it is exactly the same music from X-Men First Class when Magneto, you might not remember this, but Magneto turns this giant satellite dish by tapping into like his own past memories.
Wow.
It's like, I've listened to that soundtrack, you know, front, back, and sideways. I don't even know how many times. So I just know it instinctively. I was like, wow, that is the exact same track. And I'm like, well, same director, same composer, same studio. I guess it didn't have to, you know, there wasn't any legal, you know, issue to just repurpose it. But it's exactly the same piece of music.
I wonder if they tempted in and they were like, can't top it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I should point out, Henry Jackman does the music for both of these movies. It's really good music.
Yeah.
I've been listening to both of these scores, and they're quite good.
I think, like you, we've said this already now, but being forgiving of this movie, I think I'm forgiving of it because, again, it just feels so different and fresh for being a blockbuster movie. And it, even when it falters, I forgive it because it's so much fun seeing something that doesn't feel like the other things I'm watching. So, yeah, the music, the sort of the James Bondness of it, but the way that they heighten it and their villains are slightly cartoonish and just something. I really enjoy this world. So,
well, there we go. All I can say is bring on the next Triple X. Wait, no, that's not right. Bring on the next Kingsman. Let's see what happens. Although I don't know how well this one has performed.
I think it did like okay, right? It didn't do as well as the first one.
Well, let's see. I'm going to pull this up right now. Yeah. A more professional show, we'd have this information handy, but
yeah.
Who called us professionals?
I'll stall by saying laser bullwhip. Laser lasso.
Yes.
This is a James Bond movie with a cowboy with a laser lasso. I mean, come on.
You can't go wrong with that. I did think it was very funny when how Colin Firth keeps seeing butterflies, and he's like, go away, butterflies.
Yeah.
They're like, Harry, no butterflies.
Yeah.
Here we go. So let's see. It made $39 million domestically and $61 million internationally.
Okay.
So that's like a perfect $100 million. So, and I would assume the budget is a little bit bigger.
Yeah, what do you guess? Is this 80?
I mean, this is a movie that you don't spend too much on, you know?
Yeah.
You shouldn't, anyway. It cost about $104 million. So, they'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be fine. Oh, and now I have the IMDb page up. I'm kind of scrolling through it a little bit. But, I mean, yeah, Halle Berry's in this. We mentioned it, but Halle Berry's in this. You know?
Yeah, she's the... And so is Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, yeah. I thought they're both kind of fun, too. And it seems like if they move forward, there's room for them to continue.
Yeah, I was glad that it was only Whiskey who was the bad guy.
Yes, yes.
I didn't want the whole Statesman organization to be some like evil version of Kingsman.
Same.
So, because I had my suspicions about him, but I was like, oh man, I hope, you know,
But I fully expected Channing Tatum to actually be part of the action at the end, and so that didn't happen. That was somewhat surprising.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But any other thoughts on Kingsman 2?
No. I enjoyed talking it out with someone. I haven't talked with anyone else who's seen it.
Well, this seems like the place for you to do that.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you had talked to anyone else about it, I would have been offended.
Yeah, as you should. This is episode 130. Come on.
Yeah, at this point, you know. It's like we have history that means nothing to you, right? The life we've built together, Brian. Any other thoughts, though, about anything?
No. You?
No, I'm good.
Well, actually, I do have a thought. Matthew Vaughn, director of Kingsman 1 and 2, has mentioned interest in directing a Superman film.
Ah, yes. That's
so what are your thoughts on that?
I'm down. You know, I think that he has a view of the character that I certainly don't have a problem with. I would just love to see them do something more in the Man of Steel corner of the DC universe. And the fact that they're just kind of sitting on it is infuriating to me. So if Matthew Vaughn expressing interest is something that would get Warner Brothers to pull the trigger on it, I'd be happy about it. You know?
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that's a good place to leave it for now. I'm sure if Matthew Vaughn does end up signing on for Superman, we'll definitely have more to talk about there. But we'll be back in a few weeks to talk about whatever else is new and sundry in Hollywood.
Sounds good.
October's coming, man. We got Blade Runner coming up. It's exciting.
Oh,
we got,
yeah.
And I'll announce it here. We have a commentary track coming up for E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Oh.
Celebrating its 35th anniversary this year. This is, as you know, if you're a longtime listener, this is Brian Hall's favorite movie of all time.
I love this movie. Can't wait to talk about it with you.
So I watched the re-release in theaters. I took the boys, by the way, and it's been really cool because 3-4 weeks in a row, I took my oldest to Terminator 2, and then the week after Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the week after Star Trek 2: The Wrath of Khan, the week after E.T. the Extraterrestrial. So it's been just a blast, you know, these classic movies. And they've seen E.T. before, and I think it's long enough ago at this point that they don't really remember it, but they were just so enraptured by watching it on the big screen. And it just occurred to me, I'm like, I'm so glad I got them at this age.
Yeah.
To see that movie, you know?
And I'm happy to hear that, too, because obviously it moves at a slower pace than you might imagine for a big movie it would today.
That's right.
So that's really cool. I mean, a deliberate pace. I wouldn't say that it's a pace that's become outdated. It just it is what it is, and it's cool.
It takes its time, and it's a, you know, a relatively contained movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking through what I'm going to say in the commentary.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, my point is, I got out of the screening and I texted Brian. I said, "My body is ready. Let's do this." Yeah. So I'm really excited. I'm excited. This is going to be one of those things where I'm in the side saddle, and I just I'll sit, you know, with like my hands under my chin as I just listen to Mr. Brian just filling my ears with all kinds of ET trivia.
Yeah, I'll gargle some salt water and do my me.
That's right. It's going to be fun. So that's coming up. We're planning to drop that one next week.
Mm-hmm.
Also coming up later this week on the Nostalgia Theater Podcast is my conversation with Mark Altman, who is a writer and journalist who has covered Star Trek for decades. He's also one of the producers of the TBS series The Librarians. And a TNT series, sorry. And we had a fun conversation about Star Trek The Next Generation dropping on the 30th anniversary of that show. So that'll be Thursday of this week. So listen for that.
Very cool.
Yeah. Brian, anything you want to hype up?
Well, I'm currently over at Puppy Dog Pals, which I think is a really fun show. And it's for little kids and people who love puppy dogs. So you can check it out at Disney Junior or Disney, I believe, as well.
There we go. And as for me, you can find me at my website, zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter. That's also my Instagram. And you can also find me at the Huffington Post, where my movie reviews go up regularly, as does this show, as does the Nostalgia Theater show. And on the Diffuse Congruence podcast, which just dropped last week, is my interview and my partner Pervez Ahmed's interview with Lena Khan, who just directed a new movie called The Tiger Hunter, starring Danny Pudi
and John Heater.
Yeah.
Which is co-written by my cousin and our friend of our show, Samir Gardezi. So that's in theaters now, so check that out. It's actually really, really good. So
yeah, I can't wait worth to check the
watch. Worth a watch and listen to our interview. I think you'll enjoy that, everybody. It is my birthday, so my request on my birthday, folks, is if you could go to iTunes and leave either a review or a star rating for the Movie Film Show. Every little bit helps, and you know, the more you do for us, the more we can do for you, hopefully. It's transactional. And you can reach us at facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast. You can also email us at moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. And like I said, we'll be back soon with more movie talk. Until then, my name is Zaki Hassan, and on behalf of Brian Hall, this has been Movie Film 130. We'll see you next time.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Film Podcast. Movie Film Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zaki and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Film Podcast on the radio.